Hello and welcome to VHTB, your guide to the talent, culture, and finance side of the space startup ecosystem. My name is Matt Jurtzen from Better Everyday Studios, and I am joined today with Seika Major of Ad Astra Talent Advisors. How are you doing today?
Hey, doing great. Thanks.
Excellent. And also Justice Killian of Space Capital. How are things going, Justice?
Hey, going great.
Excellent. Today's discussion, I wanted to kind of continue on from the discussion that we had last week, which was all about change. But today I want to talk about a little bit, you know, different implication of change or reasons for those changes. And so, Justice, you shared a statistic last week that said, I think it was by Series A, 25% of startups have changed their leader, changed their CEO, and that by Series D, 60% had changed that. And that, at least, I don't know, you know, the insights of behind that, of why some of those changes are happening, but I would guess some of it has to do with there's obviously different things needed at different stages of a company. You know, when the people that you need in order to invent a new thing might be different than the people you need once it's invented and now you have to take it to scale or you have to sustain whatever that product is. And I've seen this a lot in the organizations that I've worked at where, you know, anticipating that change has done a lot of good and not anticipating that change has meant that people are kind of frustrated in their role or maybe there's not quite the right match. So I would love, you know, I'd love to start by have a conversation about kind of like what are some of the different stages that you see as a company grows and the key skills that sit within those stages that you're looking to hire.
I might even break it into, you know, even smaller chunks. So when I'm thinking at very early stage startup, we're coming up with a concept, right? Like, yeah, inventing a new technology, but a lot of it's conceptual. A lot of it's conceptual, and there's a lot of room for pivots still. Where some of that information is going to come from is building out the technical roadmap. What's the physics of what we're building? Building out the business roadmap. Where's the money going to come from? What regulations are we fighting? Who are we going to need to arm wrestle to get into some of these markets? And going and speaking to potential customers so that we've got an idea of what we're going to be building 5 years out so that we are coming up with the proper prototypes to be making now, right? Doing design for manufacturability, understanding if we're trying to get to high rates of production in 3 to 5 years, how specifically we're going to be creating our prototypes so that we're getting to something that we're going to be able to manufacture at those rates. And the people that are doing, just kind of echoing your initial point here, the people that are doing a lot of that conceptual design, market research, are going to have different skill sets than the people who are actually doing large-scale production. Justice, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts here.
Yeah, I mean, I love that was not in like that very, very early stage, highly iterative, trying to build sort of feedback from the market was the universe that I spend a lot of time in, but that was not in the framework that I was going to talk about. So I love that. That is absolutely where I spend most of my time. And a critical, a different type of skill set. I agree. So the way I sort of parse it across the whole venture landscape is you have builders, you have scalers, and you have maintainers. And they're very different types of people. What they're bringing to the table, you know, is typically, at the builder level, you're in chaos, you're in ambiguity. It's all about creating solutions quickly, and you have to have a horizontal skill set and the ability to ideally pull from experience to help curate, heuristics or quick decisions in uncharted territory. So thriving in ambiguity, right? That quickly changes when you pivot into the scale mode. And that's really defined by, what's become synonymous with venture, which is product market fit. And ideally that's, a couple million dollars in revenue, but more importantly, it's a really deep understanding of your customer and understanding that they want something that needs to be sold now tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of times in a repeatable fashion. And so that is when you flip to the scaler mode, and it really is, People who love building frameworks, repeatable processes, metrics, that could parlay a small little win into a much larger win. Thinking about systematic growth, it is verticalizing. So as opposed to going broad, you're now starting to go deep. And it's all about this growth mindset. And so how do you prioritize to, what drives that large 100% year-over-year growth? And then the third phase is this maintainer phase, which is more mature. And it is still like a repeatable processes and systems, but it's way more about optimizing operations and this idea of continuous improvement and like long-term profitability. That's a very different type of phase than high growth, which is all about how do we jump to the next big thing. This is like, how do we, ensure that we capture and extract as much value as possible out of this great thing that we currently have? And so arguably at each of those phases, it is a very different type of person, and it's a very different culture and experience. And a lot of folks, particularly at the CEO level, it can be really hard to be effective at all of those unique phases. And so that's what leads to some of this, churn, both at the senior leadership and at sort of other sort of key roles within the organization.
I love those groupings that you made there. And I think, from my perspective coming from the military and things that I've seen from other people coming from the military, not that this is true for everybody, but it's one of the reasons why, military members can struggle in different phases of a business because they're used to so much structure. Like, if the structure's there, they can execute it, and they can just execute the hell out of it. Like, it's going to be awesome. But if when it comes to building that structure, maybe it's not as good. Now, that's not of, there's plenty of military members who are good at that as well. But I would love to know, kind of like you were just landing there, you were talking about at the executive level why it, how it can be difficult to make that transition, even and at every level. How often do you see people who can move through those levels, or and how hard is it to transition, would you say?
I wish I had hard numbers on this. I don't. I could say one thing that we do from, the so when our fund invests, typically we're the first institutional investor. We've codified our learnings and observations over, 20 plus years of investing and operating, and we've built this like 200 page playbook that is tailor-made for like the CEO to sort of think through the critical roles and evolution that they will need on that sort of venture flywheel, right? And so it really starts out by raising that first round of capital, and then it goes to hiring those first 20 people and what that means for culture, and then what it means operationally, and then how do you scale people, teams, and then it sort of starts back over with raising more capital, and so all of that happens in sort of a repeatable process to the point where, there's enough value in there that you then start to anticipate like potentially selling the company. And so we try to, from the outset, actually like help founders through our observation across many, many different founders. Like, here is a repeatable sort of pattern and playbook and lessons learned on how you can do this effectively. And the hope is that you can sort of avoid some of those common pitfalls and mistakes. And you're never going to learn that from a playbook, right? But it does come from, I think, surrounding yourself with, a bunch of like really helpful folks that can help support you on that journey and be very open and honest and authentic and saying, like, I don't have the skills here. I need to, build trusted advisors or hire great people to augment us. So, within our portfolio, I would say we've had more than 50% of CEOs and senior leadership stay the course who've gone through that like Series D outcome. There have been a couple situations where the founders and the board have agreed, like willingly, to sort of make that transition happen. Just because, you're at now at a maintainer level, like this isn't the right fit for, that early stage skill set that, the CEOs had, and frankly, they don't really have the same passion that somebody else does, and so it's a mutually agreed upon decision. And then there are those ones where there's a lot of friction. And those are really tough. That's a hard outcome. often requires a clean break and, a really almost a fresh start of, what the company is and where it's going. And so that's much harder. So I wish I could give you hard numbers there. I don't think I can, unfortunately.
No, that's okay. And I mean, that's really interesting to hear about it at that higher level across your portfolio companies. Sega, from your perspective, you mentioned, even that very early stage. Are you It sounds like you're probably pretty clear and particular of thinking about the stage and the needs of the business as you're looking for candidates, and you're probably kind of, maybe not formally, but even just kind of unconsciously saying like, oh, I had a great conversation, but this company's not ready for them, or this company's too mature, and let me keep them in my back pocket for another company. Is that kind of what's going on in your head?
That's exactly what it is. And I sometimes have people who are very interested in being in that C-suite role, being a CEO. They've had experience in more mature, even early stage startups, but more mature early stage startups. And the skill set required to be an early stage founder is I have so much res so many things to say. I have so much respect for the people who are able to make that long path because it demands such dynamic areas of expertise. Very high degree of self-awareness, as Justice was saying, to be able to identify the key areas that they need complementary experts to supplement their skill sets. The ability to have, I affectionately term these people map makers because they are able to see areas that look completely ambiguous to the rest of us, and they can see the technical and strategic approach that's necessary for their technology to go, 5, 10 years in the future. And that skill set, plus the ability to communicate with the builders, the scalers, and the maintainers, right? To be able to wrangle the chaos that can sometimes come with our incredible builders, right? The wild, beautiful minds that conceive the inconceivable. And that's able to meet the pace and the structure requirements of the maintainers, right? It's such a dynamic skill set, and finding people who have got that and have the energetic capacity to do what's going to be required of a startup. These are all of the kind of angles. Yeah, go ahead.
Seika, I'm curious. So when you're recruiting for companies at different stages to fill these key roles, do you ask the candidates, like, you're looking at a broad universe of people. I'm sure that they've come from big organizations. Sometimes it's very early stage. Like, do you ask them what their preference is in terms of stage? If so, how well do they sort of align and understand the needs of, what they're going to be stepping into? And how much do you think that that matters? Like, do they need to opt into it ahead of time? Or if they have enough of a grasp, like, can they dive in and be effective? Like, how do you parse those things out?
Yeah, it's a great question. So before I go into these conversations, I know I have already done quite a bit of research on size of companies, size of budget, reach of scope, like the scope that they've been managing, teams that they've been leading. I've got most of that information. Some of it's hard to dig up online, they were there from, in these years, I don't know exactly what size, but and we'll I'll dig into what they've done. I think it's really important for them to understand, right? Have the clarity of what they're stepping into, be able to I need to be able to help them understand what this situation would be. I need to be able to communicate it, and then I need to help them either opt in or opt out, right? Those are just the three steps we've been talking about. Those are really important for me when I'm engaging with talent. And yes, I often will describe the complexities of the stage that the organization is in and talk through with people if their appetite for that. I will say that many people say, "Yeah, I'd love to do that." And
I got that. We can, yeah, bring it on.
And based on other, this, I do a lot of digging, and I often obtain the, I am quite confident that that would not be the right move for them. Even though people are like, put me in, coach. So there's a lot. Yes, asking them is definitely a piece of the puzzle, but there's a lot more to that puzzle.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's interesting. This has been really interesting, because it sounds like, so we all agree, like there are these very clear, relatively distinct stages that companies go through, and each one of those stages requires a very different skill set, and it is a rare person who can flow across all of those skill sets. So, I mean, the biggest takeaway that I'm getting from all of that is both from an individual point of view, if you're going to work in these companies, and from an organizational point of view for the company itself, how important it is to do some reflection and be clear about where you work best or what you need for where you are. You know, and I think working with, whether it's your VC firm and having and using their guidance to help you because they've seen so many companies, or your recruiting agency because they've seen a lot of companies. I imagine, you know, relying on others, getting those other opinions so that you can figure out where you're at, and if you're an individual, where you're gonna thrive, and if you're a company, who you need to thrive, sounds like the critical thing to navigate this particular piece of growing a company, which of course has so many pieces. Great conversation. Thank you so much. Always great talking to you both. Thank you.